You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, and welcome back to Connect the Dots. A fresh new week of radio served up and laid out on a slab for your contemplation.
You lost that somewhere.
So I think it's like a Cold Stone Creamery piece of ice cream confectionery.
With not all the fixin' in it, yes.
Don't think of it as a corpse, which is the other image that comes to mind when you talk about things on a slab. No, I want you to think Cold Stone Creamery. If you like corpses, you can also think of a great pun that my son came up with a couple of years ago. He was in Detroit, and so the Detroit apparently, like, the seminary there or something is like used to be like a mortuary. I'm not really clear on the real estate involved, but apparently the joke
this is interesting. Like, okay, go ahead.
This whole neighborhood is like all centered around it is all centered around this mortuary. And so they were talking about, like, what businesses you could open on the grounds of a former mortuary. And he said, well, if it were me, I would open up an ice cream shop and I would call it the crematorium.
Oh, man.
I was like, man. Extreme props for that joke. That is a great joke. That reminds me. So yesterday we had all of the guys over. So I got four boys ranging in age from 19 to 30. So they're all like these big, gigantic, lumbering guys who are all built like their dad, these big, stocky brutes.
Okay.
And they're all just funny, just hilariously funny. You put them in a room together and they're all screamingly funny. I try to keep up with them. And yesterday my son was talking about big lumbering brute, he has gigantic feet. His nickname is Bigfoot. I just call him Luke the Nordic Giant. He's an animator by trade. That's what he does for a living. He knows all about 3D animation, all this stuff, and so he was showing us the videos that he makes and so forth. And it was pretty cool. He did one for like the Israeli Tourist Bureau or something. His then 6-year-old daughter was like the voice of the little girl in the video, and it was like super cool. And so now it's like this video that's used by the state of Israel for this like tourist.
That is cool.
It is pretty cool. And it was really an interesting video too. So anyway, he was talking about his need for new shoes. He was showing off his crummy old split seams and they're leaking and all the rest of it. And so he said he has to go to the wide shoe store to get new shoes. You can't find shoes at regular shoe stores, he says, because my shoe size, he said, was 6E. And so he went to the shoe store apparently yesterday, but it was too late because they're only open. They have short hours on Sundays, he says. But I found out that I could buy my shoes on Amazon, so I'm just going to buy my shoes on Amazon now, and I'm not going to the wide shoe store anymore. And I said, and by the way, yes, I am extremely proud of this and believe that I should get a Nobel Prize for this.
I'll do a drum roll.
Okay. So you're 2.6E for your wide shoe store. 2.6E for your... I was super proud of that joke. I just thought of that joke. It just came to the top of my head, like pond scum.
From the sole of your shoe. Yeah, from the sole of your shoes.
I spoke from my soul, Sherry.
Yes.
Yes, I was so proud of that joke.
And, you cobbled it together.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes. Yes, I did. That is the thing that I did. And so I was extremely pleased with that. And
I hope they were too, because that was pretty good.
He was, that's the thing is my son, just when I tell him a joke like that, he doesn't groan. He actually just laughs and laughs really hard. So we were, yesterday was a time for readings from, so there's a guy named Dave Eggert who is hilarious. I think Dave Eggert wrote Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, or Extremely Close and Incredibly Loud. I can't remember. But he also has written these very hilarious, odd little books that are they're supposed to be like children's books of information on various topics, except it's all just made up and it's really weird. So he wrote a book called Giraffes.
Okay. I like that.
And he wrote another book called Your Disgusting Head.
I like this guy.
And they're hilariously funny books of fake information about giraffes. And
I love this. This is that's great. I'm going to have to go find this. Oh my
gosh. Yes. Just go right out on Amazon and look for Giraffes, and also Your Disgusting Head.
I totally will.
I have
some birthdays coming up of nephews, and so these sound perfect.
They will love these things. There's not a fact to be had in these books.
That's the best kind.
They look like books of interesting facts about giraffes and your head, but in fact they're just all these weird made up stuff.
I like
and
that.
It's so funny. Yeah. So Peter favored us with a reading from Your Disgusting Head, which was extremely funny.
That's a great name.
And I spent a good chunk of yesterday afternoon doing what grandpas should do with their little granddaughters, which we went on a walk in the woods.
Oh, nice.
Seraphim just had a fantastic time. She walked about 2 miles. I was really impressed with her. So
wow.
Yeah. So that's how I spent my Sunday. It was a great Sunday.
That does sound a great Sunday. I spent my Sunday. We went to go see the Batman Lego movie.
Oh, goody.
It was fun.
Was it?
Well, I mean, it was fun for many reasons. Now, the least of which was that, if you watched Batman and read comic books all your life, which I have because I'm a nerd, then you almost get vertigo from all the different Batman references that are going on simultaneously in the Lego universe while they're doing this. I mean, it's just your head is spinning.
Yeah.
My personal favorite is Wonder Dog being the DJ, from the Super Friends. That was sublime.
Wonder Dog. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So for those of you who remember Wendy and Marvin, anyway, from the Super Friends, but what was really funny is that, this past year I started teaching, and I've only encountered one student outside of the context of the school. And the first time it happens, it's kind of surreal. And I happened to catch a student as I was coming out of the Batman Lego movie, and all of my children had already gone out of the theater. So it looked like just me was coming out of the Batman Lego movie.
Okay.
She's like, hey.
Those are I can explain.
Yes, I really meant to be over in the Hidden Figures over there. I just found the wrong theater. That's right.
Okay. I was actually here for social uplifting drama. I'm actually a serious person. I was not watching the Lego Batman.
Yes.
I was being a serious adult person here.
Right. Yeah, just totally slumdogging it through movie theater. I've even got the gummy bears, and I've got the whole nine yards. It's just
my wife and I went and saw. Let's see, on Saturday we went and saw Moana.
Oh, okay.
Which was gobs of fun. I really enjoyed Moana a great deal, and I have a weakness for. everything Lin-Manuel does, and he wrote this. He wrote the music for Moana, and it was Eagles of Fun.
Oh yeah, it's really fun. Yes, yeah. I agree. And it's beautiful to watch. So I mean, it was
a beautiful film too. Yeah, it was gorgeous. And I particularly love that the really just mega stupid chicken.
Yes. Hey, hey.
In that film was actually voiced by Alan Tudyk. If you're a Firefly nerd, Alan Tudyk played Wash in Firefly.
Oh my gosh. Oh yes, I know who Wash is. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so my friend, I'm taking it back. It was not a friend of mine. Luke, the animator, saw some video about the making of Moana and then at one point they're just filming Alan Tudyk going brah!
He does look like a chicken now that I think about it.
and finally he's like looking at the camera going, I went to Juilliard.
That's a great line. Okay.
Look at me. Yeah, that's all he did was just make these dumb chicken sounds, you know. And this chicken is like, you know, every chicken is stupid, but this chicken was stupid by chicken standards. All right. Well, we're here today on Connecting the Dots with Sherry Antonetti.
We'll get to some substance sometime.
We're going to be talking about encouragement, and we'll be back on Connecting the Dots right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
The Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti.
Hello.
The lively, the glamorous, the vivacious, the talk of the town, the talk of the walk.
The easily amused.
Amused. Yes. Mother of multitudes. And I thought we'd spend a little time today talking about encouragement. I had a rather encouraging conversation today that turned out, I found out that I had encouraged somebody else, which I had not known I'd done. I mean, you know, you try to encourage people.
Right.
But a lot of times you just kind of come away going, I have no idea, you know, what they took away from that conversation or, you know. And usually you don't get any feedback. It's just like, okay, you know, thanks. And then they hang up and they leave, you know, and it's like, I don't know if I did any good. You know, you try to do good, but who knows, you know. And so I got this friend who's been struggling with severe depression.
Oh, dear.
And he's been through the ringer. I mean, he really has. He's had all these terrible things happen to him. And he's somebody who is physiologically predisposed to depression. There are actually sometimes with certain factors, there can be real physiological issues at work. So in his case, one of the things that can predispose you to depression is brain injuries. So he was injured when he was 14 years old. He sustained a head injury when he was 14 years old. And so periodically he's had depressive episodes. And it's a physiological thing, you know, that's part of it. There are all kinds of things that can factor in. I In the past, I used to have very severe bouts of depression, as did my mother. And I was, in my case, I was healed, thanks to the grace of God.
That's wonderful.
Well, yeah, and that can happen too, you know. So that can be part of it. Sometimes there's lots of different factors that come into depression. You know, for right. a lot of people, depression is as it was in my case and in my mom's case, it was depression can be rather than being physiological, it's kind of like frozen anger. Anger is supposed to be energy for life. It's supposed to motivate you to do a thing.
Yes.
But you can kind of like just sort of seize up and get directed inward. And a lot of times that turns into depression. You're angry, but you can't be angry because you're not allowed to be angry. And so the anger turns into depression. Anyway, all of that was to say I had this conversation with this guy. And he said, we had lunch about a month ago. And I tried to be encouraging. And came away from the conversation like I usually do, going, I have no idea if that did him any good.
You know? Right.
And anyway, we had lunch again today. And in the course of the conversation, he said, that thing that you said to me the last time has really stuck with me. I'm like,
what did I say?
Right? I don't remember.
And, oh, no. You know, kind of a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, what happened was apparently he'd actually checked into a psych ward because he was afraid he was going to hurt himself.
Wow, that takes courage.
Yeah, it took a lot of guts for him to do that, and I was really proud of him for doing that. You know, because so a lot of times people treat mental and emotional illness like it's a stigma, like I've done something wrong.
Something to be ashamed of, and it's
yeah, not, and it's like, it's would you not. Be ashamed if you broke your arm and got treatment for it? Well, no. Well, don't be ashamed about this kind of illness either, you know.
There's a lot going on in this world. It's understandable. Yeah. Some of it's overwhelming.
Right, yeah. And believe me, he's got reasons to be overwhelmed. And so anyway, when we were talking, he said, well, you told me that I wasn't abandoned. And I said, okay. He said, well, see, what happened was like 2 days before we had lunch, he'd been in the hospital and somebody had come and visited him. And he said, in the course of the conversation, he had told this person that he was talking to, I feel as though God has abandoned me. And so in the course of our conversation, I said, God has not abandoned. He didn't tell me anything about this. I didn't know about this conversation he'd had with a friend of his. But I said, God has not abandoned you.
And that's the Holy Spirit working through you.
Yeah, it was exactly, you know, it was one of those things where you go, well, how about that? You know, so he said that was direct from God to me.
Yes, it was.
And I was like, okay, well, thanks be to God. Of course, it was not me. I didn't know, you know. But it was like, okay, you know. So, I mean, it really brought home to me. This is a conversation I had like an hour ago with somebody. And it really brought home to me how much encouragement can do for people, you know, that you can really like, it can be the difference between life and death for some people.
And I thought about, yes.
Yeah. And I thought about, you know, times in my life that people have done things to encourage me. You know, sometimes it's been priests in a confessional have said something that has been enormously encouraging, or people have written me. I've had people write me sometimes and say, you know, this thing that you said or this thing that you wrote, like, made a big difference. And what I always find amazing is how circular encouragement is, that when you encourage somebody, a lot of times they will write you back and tell me, you encouraged me. And then you go, hey, I encouraged somebody.
Yeah, it makes you feel great.
So, I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, experiences in your life where someone has encouraged you, you've encouraged somebody else.
Well, yes, I would say when I first thought of when you said this was my, I have a book that is a treasure of mine. Back when I started writing, I had this idea for a book I wanted to write. And my daughter for Mother's Day gave me a book that was a resource on that topic, Helen of Troy. And in it, she wrote, "You can do it." And I treasure, I use that book, but I treasure it for that little note. And if ever I'm feeling kind of down, I'll go and I'll just look at it. And it still gives me a lift, even though it was written 7 years ago.
Uh-huh.
It's just, you know, it's just a little, "You can do it," written in an untidy scrawl of a then, you know, sixth grader. And I love it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but as a teacher, you spend a lot of time being a de facto cheerleader, trying to convince people that they can do the work that, you know, that they don't know that they can do. That's yeah. The short definition of your job. And, you know, when you have a student come in and they're discouraged because the whole world has told them they're not smart, they can't do it, they don't know enough to do it, and they're not going to make it, you know, hearing even one person saying, "You got this," is enough to get students who are world weary to try.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, when you get done with the day and they've tried, you're almost like, "Pump my fist, you woohoo!" That they haven't despaired. You know, you feel like you're barring the gate against despair. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And over the break, I told you about a student that I work with who last semester she was the top of the class, and because success moves you up, she got moved to a different class this semester, and it's. So she's more middle of the pack.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And because she was cocky and strong in the first one, I kind of thought that would carry over. But because she's now middle of the pack, she's much more tentative. And so we're having to restart and say, "Hey, you got here because you could do it. Don't forget that." And that's what I've got to like bring out of her, is to get her to see that it's still there. It didn't go away just because you switched classes,
right?
which is, you know, tough.
Yeah.
But you know, when you talk about encouragement, I want to say that the best thing I know that is that when you see that someone is down, the most encouraging thing you can do is to listen. And a lot of times, I think we live in a very noisy world, where people don't notice that somebody is feeling frail.
Yeah.
And that to me is the key component, that the casual, instead of saying, "How are you doing?" and getting the fine, when you get something other than fine, you should stop. You know, mm-hmm. and that's like the key. You know, whatever, "How are you doing?" And they start talking, and immediately you're thinking, "Why did I ask that question?" Because they're telling you something you didn't, you know, more than you expected. And my mother called it, "You got a case of the understanding face," where you get the story that you didn't expect and you didn't want, but it's an opportunity to be a source of warmth and salt and light for that person by just listening to their troubles, and that makes it lighter. I believe that about everybody. It says, I don't have a story to go with that because I wouldn't want to share intimacies that would be unjust. But I do know that that is the truth, that when you see somebody and you give them a smile, a lot of times they smile back and they'll feel a little better just because of that little thing. Talking to the person who's opening the door, or the person who, you know, takes your dry cleaning, anything.
Yeah. When we come back, I'll tell you an interesting and kind of ooky story.
Okay. Ooky. Okay.
Yeah, about something that happened to a priest friend of mine.
Ooh, cool.
We'll be back in a little bit. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti talking about encouragement. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with none other than Sherry Antonetti. Sherry Antonetti is one of these people that has had a chance, as we all have had, to encourage people, and she's a good encourager of other people. And I thought it would be interesting as well. You've encouraged me, so I appreciate it. And one of the things that you know, we have our stories in our lives of encouragement. We go back to those moments in our lives when people have said something that have encouraged us, have made us, you know, feel better. I think some personalities find it easy to return to words of encouragement they've heard other people give them and go, yeah, I'm one of those people. Speaking of teaching, when you're teaching a room full of people, and sometimes you'll have an experience where, like, everybody in the room is obviously, they're tracking, they're listening, they're really interested, they're engaged. Mm-hmm. There's one guy in the back of the room who is obviously not paying attention, or they're heckling you or whatever. Yes. And they're like that seed in your tooth, right? The whole meal may be fantastic, but there's that one seed in your tooth, right?
Yes.
And, you know, we've all had those kind of experiences. And I'm definitely the guy that always is focused on the seed in the tooth, not on how great the meal tastes. And it makes me a hard person to encourage, because, you know, I can have 50 people tell me, great job. But if I get one person saying, you suck, I hate you, then I'm like, that guy hates me, you know?
Yeah, see, you don't strike me that way, because you seem to be able to handle controversy in a way that, like, I fall apart.
Well, how should I put it? Sometimes, you know, if you're aware that the person is just, like, crazy or, you know, dumb or whatever, then you can, like, bracket it. But if somebody has, like, a legitimate criticism, I think my first duty is, and I don't think it's wrong, by the way, my first duty is to go, well, you know, if you're not dealing with this problem, then you're not giving it 100%. You know, and so you have to address real criticisms and stuff. But it makes me the sort of person that spends a lot of time worrying about, I wanted to tell a story.
Go ahead.
Sort of bracketing all of that for a minute. I wanted to tell this story because one of the things, you know, the really great moments of encouragement are the ones where you realize that God was the author of the encouragement. And so because I'm one of those people who can go, well, yeah, you thought I did a nice job, but what do you know? You're dumb, right?
Yes. No. Yeah. That's the classic line my kids will say, you know, they don't, nobody loves me. Well, we love you. Well, you're my parents. You don't count.
You have to say stuff. Right. And so, and so it's like super easy to brush stuff like that off. Yes. But when the encouragement comes from God, it's like, look, will you just take the encouragement and stop deflecting it? And, you know, I had a priest friend several years ago who was, he does not have a prophetic charism, which is part of what makes this story interesting. He's got a lot of gifts. He's an amazing guy. But prophetic charisms are not among them.
Okay.
But he said several years ago, this is my old pastor.
Okay.
Father Michael Sweeney. He's a Dominican who was he was the president of the Dominican School of Philosophy and Theology after he left my parish to go, because that's where the Dominicans put him. I don't know what he's doing these days. He's down in California somewhere. But he said he was invited to be one of the priests at this retreat and hear confessions. And so he said, sure. So he comes to this retreat, and he was late because he's always late for everything.
I like and, him.
He's great. Yeah, I love the guy. So anyway, he shows up at this thing, you know, comes rushing in, sits down, has not had a chance to meet anybody, any of these retreatants, and he doesn't know any of them, including the woman who was the first one in line, who's already there waiting for a confessor. So he goes in, bustles in, sits down, puts on his stole, you know, because his stole, it's okay. And so the woman starts making her confession, and immediately he says, he didn't know this woman from Eve, but immediately the thought hits him, tell her to finish her book. And he kind of puts that out of his mind, but the thought is just persistent. Tell her to finish her book. And so Father Michael, being Father Michael, his response was, I will not.
I like this. Okay.
That's just crazy. I don't even know who this woman is, right? And so the confession goes on, and he's hearing her confession. And the whole time, this voice is saying, tell her to finish her book. And so he's like, this is really weird, right?
Yeah.
So she finishes her confession, and he says, I'm sorry. I hope you won't think I'm crazy, and if you want to just ignore this, I completely understand, but I have this very strong sense that I'm supposed to tell you to finish your book. And the woman just like blanched, white as a sheet.
Oh my goodness.
And it turned out that this was like the number one issue in her whole life, right? She's been working on this book and, you know, kept thinking I'm dumb and nobody cares about this thing and who am I to write a book and et cetera. And so she just had not worked on her book. And she wrestled and struggled with this, but she didn't think of any of this as having the character of sin in any way. So she hadn't confessed it.
Right.
And so Father Michael goes, yeah. So anyway, finish your book. And she just like turned white. And then it all came pouring out, this whole thing about her book that she hadn't even thought about confessing.
Oh my goodness.
So anyway, it turned out that this was the big issue in her life. So she was granted absolution. And then, you know, having this very clear
direction from God,
God, she went off and she finished her book, which she then apparently dedicated to Father Michael.
That's wonderful. You've reminded me of a story that's a parallel kind of a thing. When I was a young woman and you found out for the first time I was pregnant, I was honestly terrified out of my mind because I knew that I had some health issues that were going to come up. And the first obstetrician that I went to visit said abort, which wasn't happening, but that was pretty frightening. And the second one said the same thing. And they told me I either was going to have to abort or have a tracheotomy. And that was terrifying because I'd already had two in my lifetime and third didn't seem like a good idea.
Okay.
So I got on my bicycle because I lived in Houston at the time and biked to St. Michael's in Houston, about a mile from my house, my apartment. Uh-huh. And I never went to St. Michael's. I didn't like it. I felt like it was too suburban. Just wasn't my cup of tea.
Right.
Went to the 9 o'clock mass. And again, I almost never did this ever. And I would call it, in all honesty, it wasn't any particular day, no celebration, no feast day, no nothing. It wasn't the last day of school. It was, however, the dripping baby mass is what I would call it. Because there were more mothers, more pregnant women, more women pushing strollers with two, three, you know, having children. I mean, it was like lines and lines. And they're singing Be Not Afraid. I mean, the whole nine yards is being Full Metal Stop. Sherry, get the message. Do not. Not be afraid. And every woman going up for communion is like Mary saying to me, it'll be okay. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
And so that was a pretty direct encouragement in the form of a neon sign as far as I was concerned. Yeah. I don't remember anything else about that mass other than that.
You know,
but it was a dripping baby mass.
Dripping baby mass.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, and you get those things sometimes, just now and then. You know, I mean, I think that it's a mistake for people to run around looking for signs.
Yeah, you know, Jesus even warns against that. You know,
right.
You
yeah.
Sign, you're not getting one.
Yeah, I know people that do stuff like that. That spend, you know, a lot of everything is always a sign, and there's always, you know, and you know, they're the sort of people who, you know, the people that come up and say, you know, God told me to choose the cream corn, not the whole kernel. And it was like, yeah, I think he just is telling you to cut caffeine, man. You know, I really don't think that God cares if you have corn or kernel. You know, just have the whatever corn you like, just eat that. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, now and then these moments will happen, you know, and when they do happen, they're sort of like stand-ins for all the times that they don't happen.
Yes.
So I'm one of those people, you know, one raising of Lazarus is good enough for me. I don't need one every day, right?
Yeah.
And we'll continue. You're listening to Connect the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti. And we'll be back talking about encouragement right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti. We are talking about encouragement. And I'm sorry, did you say you had a story you wanted to tell? Or
I did have a story. Well, I mean, we were talking kind of about how God encourages us and does it, not necessarily with neon signs, but usually with people. I started to tell you over the break the little story about being asked, you know, feeling the prickle to pray about my father's at the time pending death. He had Alzheimer's and he'd had it for many years, but he was very sick. And my mother went to see him faithfully every day. I mean, she was just always there, always present. And I prayed that she would get to be with him when he died. I could pray that. I couldn't pray for him to die, but I could pray that she would be there, that she wouldn't miss those last few moments. Mm-hmm. And he died 2 days later. I told my mother the next day about it. And then the next day, which happened to be Ash Wednesday, he died. Mm-hmm. And my mother was there with him. He took three breaths. One was, and she knew God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, and he was gone. But she also had people there with her, so my prayer was answered to the letter. And of course my immediate reaction as an ungrateful wretch is, I didn't mean now.
Those things. I was mentioning to Sherry over the break, one of my wife's ancestors had lost lost a daughter when she was young. And he took sick, and he told his wife he had had a dream, and he said the baby came to me in the dream, said she would be back for me on Tuesday, and then he died on Tuesday. And his wife took that as a great consolation.
I bet you did. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you come away from that going, okay, we're not living in a meaningless universe, you know?
And what we love are not forever veiled from us.
One of the greatest and most consoling, speaking of encouragement, one of the most consoling things that John Henry Newman ever said. And Newman seems to me to have had a charism of encouragement. I know a number of people. Sherry Waddell was a friend of mine, the author of Forming Intentional Disciples. And
love that book.
She has told the story for years. This is about the time I got to know her, actually. She just hit rock bottom. She took this job out of college that she thought was just going to be like a secretarial job. And it turned out that the guy that was running, like, it was like this giant international relief organization. And he had decided he was going to quit, and he didn't tell anybody. And so he hired her, she thought, for a secretarial job. But his secret plan was basically, I'm going to teach you everything that I know, and then I'm leaving. Goodbye.
Oh, my
God. So all of a sudden, he's like left in charge of this giant relief agency, right? And she was totally unqualified for this job. And, of course, you know, made a dog's breakfast of it because there was no way she could have done this, you know?
Right.
And so consequently, she wound up losing the job before they fired her. And she literally came within 25 cents of being homeless. Wow. And it was just this horrendous experience for her.
Oh.
But she was not a Catholic at this point, but she used my parish and what would eventually become her parish as well, Blessed Sacrament in the U District in Seattle, as her prayer place, because she was aware of the presence of the Holy Spirit there. She's always had a charism of discernment. And so she was there at Blessed Sacrament one day, and she found this little pamphlet of prayers, and one of them was a prayer by John Henry Newman.
Oh, I went up to find this prayer. That sounds great.
What came out of it, there's a line in this prayer that said, whoever I am, whatever I do, I can never be thrown away. And this really meant everything to her at this time. And she never forgot this. She couldn't remember who had written it. She didn't know anything about Newman. And Newman wrote this when he was himself really down low, because Newman himself went through all of this suffering. He was like betwixt and between. Protestants didn't trust him anymore because he became a Catholic, and Catholics didn't like him because he'd been a Protestant, and he was like nobody liked him, you know. And St. Paul went through this too, this thing where, you know, the Jews all hated him because he was a Christian now, and the Christians all hated him because he used to beat up Christians, you know. And so he wound up in this place. But Newman seems to have this knack for consoling people because he's been down there. And he, one of the things that he wrote one time, which I found very consoling, when my own mother died a couple of years ago, that was kind of, you know, when your parents go,
yes,
all of a sudden, you're the oldest generation now.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter when it happens, you feel like an orphan.
Oh, you feel like an orphan, and you look around and you think, I don't know what I'm doing. And
Yes. Now
my kids, you know, the next generation are all looking at me. I'm supposed to be old and wise, and what do I know? I don't know anything, you know. And so, but Newman said, all who have ever lived are living still.
I love
everyone,
it.
Everyone who has ever lived lives still. You haven't lost anybody. They're all still there, you know, and you still have communion with them through Christ. And that meant so much to me. And when my mom died, I had, well, a couple of things. My mom had an experience right after my dad died that stuck with me. It still sticks with me for years. So right after my dad died, she didn't know what to do with his body. And so the funeral home said, look, we can just, we'll cremate your husband if that would be okay with you. And she finally thought about it and said, okay. She wasn't sure what to do. And so she did that. And then she, as was her custom, she revolved this around in her mind over and over again, and she was, you know, struggling with it. So we're out in the garden one day, and I'm helping her, you know, do what we always do in Western Washington soil, which is pull rocks out of the soil, because that's what you spend your whole life doing in Washington. And so she said, Mark, if I tell you something, will you not laugh at me? I said, sure, you know. And so after she had Dad cremated, she was struggling with this for a while. So she was in their bedroom folding clothes. And she finally, she said out loud, she said, "Pat, I hope I did the right thing." Oh. Now, there was this little music box thing that my dad had given my mom years before. It played Laura's theme from Dr. Zhivago.
Yes, I know that song. Yeah.
You know that song? So yeah. She was supposed to, the way this music box always worked was you're supposed to like open the lid and pull out the thing. And, you know, you have to do these things to it to make it play. So she said she's sitting there folding clothes and she says out loud, "Pat, I hope I did the right thing." And she said, all of a sudden, the music box started playing. And she said, just, you know, like this peace just washed over her, right? And she looked at the stage, she thought, that's weird, you know?
but really awesome.
But it was a huge encouragement for her, a huge consolation for her. And so she told me this story. She says, do you believe me? I said, sure, I believe you, you know?
Absolutely.
Why would you make that up, right?
I absolutely believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just one of these little things, but that's how, in my experience, that has always been what it's like when God speaks. It is always a still small voice. It's something that you and you alone get.
Yes.
And you know, at that moment that this was God speaking to you, and it's like a bomb went off in your own heart, but everybody around you, life is going on as normal. Nobody notices anything different, but for you, the whole universe just got turned upside down.
Yes, it did, and you can go back exactly to that moment.
Yeah,
every time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and my own mom did that for me after she died. I had this big, basically, it was a big crisis of trying to pay the taxes, and it looked like we were doomed for sure. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I get this letter from my brother saying, you know, here, mom's inheritance for you, right? And it was like, dang, you know, and I have always had a sense since then that my mom is looking out for me.
Yep.
And it's just, yeah. So all who live, all who have ever lived, live still. Thank you. Cardinal Newman. Yeah.
Well, that is wonderful. I'm going to go look up that prayer from Cardinal Newman. I my own experience with Cardinal Newman was I had to write about in college about a Newman type educational experience. And my father had taught me, take professors, not classes, and you'll never be bored.
Oh, okay.
And so I learned, because the people I met were in love with their subject, it encouraged me to love their subject. And there was an encouragement thing again, is that every time I got a person that was in love with their subject, I was intoxicated by their zeal, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. I think that's really smart.
And the one time I disobeyed it, I had the most miserable experience, and it's the only C I got in college. So it was like, okay, I won't disobey that wisdom again. But I had to be stubborn at some point, you know?
Fantastic. Well, Sherry Antonetti, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You out there in Radio Land have been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we've been talking about encouragement with Sherry Antonetti. Our producer today was Mr. Danny Head, and we will be back tomorrow with Lisa Hendy.
Ooh, wonderful.
Ooh, yeah. So listen in then.
Have a great week.
Then, have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.